Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here's Bob.
Today we're going to be in Genesis chapter 26. This is really the only chapter where Isaac is the dominant character. Now, I realize that his patriarchalness is going to go on for several more chapters, but Jacob very quickly becomes the dominant theme. This is the only central chapter. I think Isaac, though a godly person, as Mount Moriah experience shows, was a quieter person, a calmer person, not as an aggressive person. And this chapter is really going to show that in how he deals with the Philistines. Very godly man, very non-aggressive, has some wonderful characteristics, but I guess it just doesn't make for as many accounts being recorded. There was a famine in the land. We've seen a period of these famines. It has caused the history of Israel to be twisted in many divine ways. It was a famine that's going to cause Jacob to go down to Egypt, where they're going to be finally enslaved. It's a famine that causes Isaac to want to go to Egypt. It's a famine earlier in Genesis 20, I believe it's verse 10, that caused Abraham to go to Egypt. That's where he got Hagar, the slave of Sarah. That's the first time he calls Sarah his sister. So there's a famine in the land. Now, Isaac is going to seem to act just the way that Abraham acted. Now, let me just say to you, here's a cyclical pattern of events. A famine comes periodically. Why do all liberal scholars seem to say that this is one event with several different differing accounts? Why couldn't culturally these men handle the problem the same way? I think that's a much better explanation than trying to get all these sources out of Genesis. I really think the JEDP theory of source criticism is the theological pits. You ought to see Josh McDowell's Evidence That Demands a Verdict, Volume 2. There was a famine in the land, besides the previous famine that had occurred in the days of Abraham, chapter 20, verse 10 and following. So Isaac went to Gir. Now, Gir is identified one of these Philistine cities. There are five major Philistine cities form kind of a circle on the Palestinian southern coast. This is close to one of them. Now, the king was called Abimelech. He was the king of the Philistines. Now, we learn from verse 26 of this same chapter that this Abimelech may have been kind of a title like Pharaoh or Caesar or Hadad. Every generation had the same name, because we're going to find another one some 75 to 80 years later, which doesn't seem to be the same one. And Yahweh appeared to him and said, "Do not go down to Egypt." Now, I wonder why. Why did he forbid him to go to Egypt? That's obviously where he was heading. Maybe because his father Abraham had gone to Egypt. Maybe because that's where the grain was. But God said, "No, Isaac, you stay here and you trust me. In the midst of this famine, you trust me." Boy, Isaac did it. So God's testing Isaac the same way he's tested Abraham. Now, stay here in the land which I will give you. It's part of the promised land, of course. Sojourn in this land, and I will be with you and bless you. To you and your descendants I will give all these lands. Wow. Not only does he say stay, but this tremendous promise that I'll be with you is the promise he made with Abraham earlier. He's going to make with Jacob later in chapter 28. What greater blessing could there be than the eternal Creator God saying, "I'll be with you wherever you go. If you trust me, I'll bless you because I'm going to do something with your family." Ooh, boy. Now, we're getting in here to this, "I will establish the oath which I swore to your father Abraham." Now we're getting into the covenant, the promise, the line of the Messiah. This covenant was introduced or reconfirmed several times during the life of Abraham. Chapter 12, chapter 15, chapter 17, chapter 22. And now it's here reaffirmed to his son, Isaac. And in verse 4, it tells us something about this covenant. "I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven." Now, sometimes God calls the descendants stars, sometimes the dust of the earth, sometimes the sand of the sea. But it's metaphors for large family. Now, do you think for a man whose wife is barren that this is some kind of promise? That they've been trying to have children, you know, for 20-something years, and finally they have a boy. This is the only one boy. God, can you make me that big a family? Yeah. And I will give your descendants the lands. Now, it's really interesting to me that the Abrahamic covenant emphasizes two things, the land and the seed. The Old Testament really majors on the concept of the land. It's a very important thing. The inheritance rights are crucial. The New Testament seems to focus on the seed. Now, and by your descendants, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Now, this really should probably be translated, shall bless themselves. This promise of the universal significance of this family, and I really think the reason that God chose Abraham was to choose a nation as a kingdom of priests, Exodus 19, 5 and 6, to choose a world. God's heart has always been for His entire creation. He's going to do it through the Messiah, through the seed of a family, a group He'll specially relate to and reveal His will to. But this universal implication is put in two grammatical forms. In this particular verse, it's the Hebrew form called the hithpael. And basically that is a reflexive form, or if you're familiar with the Greek language, it's a middle form. They're going to bless themselves through what God's doing to these people. Now that's exactly what Abimelech's going to do. He's going to say, I know God's blessing you and I want to be a part of this just by making friends with you. The world's going to see the blessing of God and want to be a part. That's the reflexive idea. It's here in Genesis 26. It's also in Genesis 22, 16 through 18. I think that's very important. But the other numerous times this promise is given, the very same words, it's in a niphal stem. Now, niphal seems to be the basic passive idea. Through all the families of the earth, you will be blessed through you. Now that occurs in Genesis 12, 3, Genesis 18, 18, Genesis 28, 14, in the New Testament, Acts 3, 25, Galatians 3, 8. Now, of course, the New Testament seems to be a reflection of a quote from the Greek translation we call the Septuagint. Now, in the Septuagint, there is no distinction made in the Greek translation between the niphal and the hithpael. And so, I don't know if we can make it. They're not that big a deal anyway. One, the nations are going to be blessed. One, they're going to bless themselves. But what blesses me is, here is the universal heart of God. Even so early in the book of Genesis, God loves all men. Oh, I want to tell you, Ezekiel 18:32, 1 Timothy 2:4, 2 Peter 3:9, John 3:16 are important verses to me about the universal love of God. And Abraham obeyed me. Now this goes back to Genesis 15:6, that very important passage that Abraham, though in a faulty way, believed God was going to give him a child. And though he giggles in chapter 17 or 16, I forgot which it is, and though he tries with Abraham's handmaid, Hagar, Abraham's belief in God was counted to him as righteousness. And on the basis of Abraham, God's going to act faithfully toward the children of men. Now, because Abraham obeyed me and kept my charge, my commandments, and my statutes and my laws. This is the first time the word Torah, later to be used for all the writings of Moses, which means teachings or law, is used. So Isaac lived at Gir, and of course he obeyed God, lived there. When the men of the place asked about his wife, he said, she is my sister. Oh, Isaac, you did exactly what your dad did. Maybe that's the way we pass our sins on to our kids. They learn the things we do and emulate it. So that happened back in 2012. Now, it's true of Abraham that Sarah was his half-sister. Rebekah is not Isaac's half-sister. You said, was Isaac lying? Well, from these newsy tablets that I've mentioned to you so much, which describe the Hurrian culture, there is some evidence of when a man married, he would adopt his wife. And in that sense, they'd become brother and sister as another way of affirming their commitment to each other. Maybe that happened to Isaac and Rebekah. I'm just not sure. But he's going to say, she is my sister. Abraham did it twice. Genesis 12, 13, Genesis 20, verses 2 and 12. Isaac's going to do it once. I think it is three separate accounts, not one account mixed up over and over. The men of the place might kill me on account of Rebekah, for she is beautiful. Obviously, Sarah was a beautiful lady. Obviously, Rebekah is a beautiful lady. Beautiful but barren, both of them. And it came about, and they've been there a long time, that Abimelech, the king of the Philistines, looked out through a window. I want to tell you, more kings get in trouble looking over their balconies. That's what happened to David. And saw, and behold, Isaac was caressing his wife, Rebekah. Who was this word? They making love? I don't know. The word here is used in Exodus 32:6 about the golden calf experience, where it seems to imply an orgy took place. But it's also the same Hebrew root as the name for Isaac, which means laughter. Maybe he was just playing around with Rebekah. Fondling her is the way some translations have it. You might want to see this play on the name Isaac in Genesis 17:17. 17:19, 18:12, and 21:6 and 9. Well, he was harsing around with his wife, and the king knew you don't harse like that with your sister. He got the idea anyway. Now you say, well, how'd that king look? What was he doing, just in the backyard or something? Well, the king's house was normally higher than the others. The fact that Isaac lived close to the king showed he was an important person, even in that as a sojourner. And the king, maybe he was a peeping Tom anyway, I don't know, but he saw it and recognized that Isaac had lied to him. Well, why did it make so much difference? Well, look at verse 10. Well, let me go back to 9. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, behold, certainly she is your wife. How then did you say she is my sister? And Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on account of her. He admits he was afraid. I bet there was tradition in Abimelech's family about what happened to his daddy and this guy's daddy, Abraham and Sarah. Maybe he knew it as a tradition. He's going to fuss at Isaac here and say that was inappropriate. I want to tell you, Abimelech comes across a lot more noble than Abraham does earlier, too. So maybe they had some sense of morality, which they obviously did. And he's going to kind of fuss at Isaac. So Abimelech charged all the people and said, he who touches this man or his wife shall be surely put to death. Now that seems like an overstatement to me. Either Isaac was a very important person or already they recognized the hand of God on Isaac's life. You might want to see verse 28 where it admits that. Now Isaac sowed in that land. Abraham has never said to sow. This is something new. They're becoming semi-nomadic. They're becoming settled. And reap the same a hundredfold. That's a good crop. There have been some evidences for that in history, so it's not totally out of the realm of possibility. But it is a supernatural blessing, probably linked only to Isaac's field. And the Lord blessed him. Now, of course, in Deuteronomy 27 and 28, agricultural blessing is going to be linked to covenant fidelity. And that's the idea that's being born right here. And the man became rich and continued to grow rich until he became very wealthy. For he had possessions of flocks and herds and a great household. It's still nomadic wealth. So the Philistines envied him and all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, his father. The Philistines stopped up by filling them with dirt. Now, what's the deal here? Well, remember how the Egyptians finally put the Hebrews under this taskmasters because the Hebrews grew so much, the Egyptians during the Exodus period became afraid of them. The same thing is happening here. Now, I think this is obviously related to that Hithael stem used earlier in this chapter, that the people are going to see the blessings of God uniquely on these people in the way they're growing and their wealth is growing. And they're going to envy that and want that. They may fear it at first like the Egyptians, but they also envy it. Well, how do you get blessed like that? Well, it's because of their God. Their God like that. Now, is God just saying, I'll bless you and you come to know me? No, I think that would be what Jesus was tempted about, just feeding him. It's not just blessing that God gives, but it's a way that God confirmed that he is the only true God in the face of other deities that are supposedly fertility gods and the like. Now, this by stopping up the wells, the Philistines showed an aggressive act. Now, they stopped the wells up because a man with a lot of herds, if there's no water, has to move to where there is water. They knew Isaac was a nomadic person. That's why he lived in tents originally and stuff and had these herds. It was a way of subtly but not so suddenly saying, friend, it's time for you to move. And Isaac's going to do it. Then Abimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you are too powerful for us. And apparently, Isaac, knowing he was more powerful, could have beat the hound out of him and took over the city. He just moved away. Notice where it says, and Isaac departed from there and camped in the valley of Gear and settled there. He moved far enough away to get some other wells away from the city. He was going to settle there. And Isaac again dug wells of water, which had been dug in the days of his father Abraham. For the Philistines had stopped them up. He undug the wells they had filled up earlier. And he gave them surnames which his father had given them. He's going to give them the same names Abraham called them, probably as a way of recognizing that God was still involved with him like he was with Abraham. You say, well, how do wells connect with God's blessing? Friends, in desert communities, water is a blessing from God, especially those who have flocks and herds. It's a necessity. So the wells kind of have faith in their names, okay? But when Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found there a well of flowing water, that means a live well, not when you have to dip out, but it bubbled out, the herdsmen of Gear quarreled with the herdsmen of Isaac, saying, the water is ours. So he named the well, and the Hebrew name here is the word for contention, because they contended with him. Now, he was obviously stronger than these other shepherds. They felt they had some land rights, that the water was theirs because it was on their land, not because they dug the well. And Isaac seems to say, okay, well, that's all right. I hear what you're saying. He moved a little further. He could have won a battle, but he moved a little further. Shows the gentleness of the man. Okay. Then he dug another well, and they quarreled over it too. And he named this one Enmity. Now, the fighting must have been worse. They were really fighting over this well. Isaac could have put the bite on them. He was stronger and bigger, but he didn't. He moved on further away. He realized that God was with him. He didn't have to show his power. It shows the kind of character of this man, very godly man. And he moved away from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. It was far enough away. So he named it, and the name here is going to be Broad Places. Now, to Hebrew people, broad places is a sign of a gift of God. It's a sign of freedom and happiness and joy, different from being cooped up. So this is going to be a faith name that means that the Lord, and look at the next phrase, at last the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in this land. God told him not to go to Egypt. He stayed to the famine. He found water, but people took it away. He found other water, but people took it away. It was his daddy's wells, but he still let them have them. And he got to a place where he wasn't bothering anybody. God blessed him with more water. And there, God's going to bless him even more than he ever had before to show that he was pleased with the test that Isaac had seemingly passed here. Then he went up there to Beersheba. And the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of your father. I am the Elohim. Now, I am is very close to the name Yahweh. Now, we'll see Exodus 3:14. Elohim is the rabbis say it means God in his power. God is creator. Yahweh is more God in his mercy, God in his covenant. I am the Elohim of your father, Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. Same kind of thing that he told Abraham not to fear. Apparently, just the presence of deity causes men to tremble, as it will later in Jacob's life at Bethel. I will bless you. I will multiply your descendants for the sake of my servant Abraham. This is exactly a recapitulation of the covenant mentioned in verse 5, this very chapter. So he built an altar there, and he called upon the name of the Lord. Now, he's going to build an altar. He's going to call Yahweh. Now, we learn later on, Exodus 3 and Exodus 6, the patriarchs called God El Shaddai, Exodus 6:2, not Yahweh. And here it says he called the name of Yahweh. Well, I think what it's saying is, it's not a contradiction, they called on the covenant God. And though they may even have used the term Yahweh infrequently, their main term was El Shaddai, God Almighty. And they didn't know the full implications of Yahweh until God revealed himself to Moses. I think that's the way it should go. He pitched his tent there. He's a full nomad again. and there Isaac's servants dug a well. Now, this digging a well was a sign of faith. It showed permanency. It was trusting in God to provide water for his flocks. It was a sense of divine blessing. Verse 26. Then Abimelech came to him from Greer with his advisor. Now, this advisor's name is the only thing different back from chapter 20, verse 10 and following, or 12 and following, where Abimelech deals with Abraham. But it's been 75 or 80 years, and most of us think that's much too long for the same man to be alive. Besides, if it was the same man, you think he'd have been really ticked off by this guy's son tricking him just like his father had over saying his wife's his sister. Last time it cost him a disease. So I think with this new servant's name here mentioned, even though the name of the king and the name of his commander, Phicol, are exactly the same, most of us assume that it's just a name for these leaders and not the same person. Now, he's the same guy that told him to get out just a few verses earlier. Phicol, the commander of the army, they came now. By the way, I want to stop here and do a little aside. If you look at the heading to Psalms 34, you'll see the name Abimelech is a general name for these kings, like Pharaoh or Hadad or Caesar or whatever. And Isaac said to them, "Oh, why have you come to me since you hate me and have sent me away from you?" Well, Isaac was meek, but he's not a coward. He said, "What's the deal? What do you want from me now?" And they said, "We plainly see that the Lord has been with you. So we said, let now there be an oath between us, between even you and us, and let us make a covenant with you." Now, I think this is part of that promise that God says they're going to bless themselves through you. They're recognizing that something's different about Isaac. You know, I think that's the way God deals with people who are lost. They don't always are going to read a Bible and not always going to go to church. But they're going to sense need in their own life. And they're going to see things in believers' lives. That's why it's so important that we live an attractive Christian life. That's where things like our home life is so important. The way our kids act are so important. The way we worship, the way we have joy. God's going to use that. He'll attract people to himself through the quality of our lives. But, oh, God help us, sometimes our lives aren't too attractive. You say, "Bob, does this mean that God's going to make us all wealthy?" I think that's a modern problem that people have proof texted the Old Testament and missed the fact that most of the New Testament people, that persecution, joy amidst persecution, faithfulness amidst persecution, becomes almost the New Testament sign of God's presence and faithfulness, as abundant physical blessing was in the Old. We have to take into account. Now, they want to make a deal. I get they're still afraid of Isaac because he's so powerful and so rich and his family is so large, and they also recognize that God's with him. Then he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. Now, apparently this idea of a feast along with a covenant is very common. Matter of fact, that very famous New Testament passage, Revelation 3:20, "Yea, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone will hear my voice and open the door, I'll come into him and sup with him and him with me." I think it goes back to this. That's not for salvation. That's about the fellowship of those who are saved. Matter of fact, I think the Lord's Supper goes back to this idea of a fellowship meal. I think the peace offering in which a man brought an animal, not out of sin or guilt or shame or anything, but because he just wanted to, and then symbolically God and him ate together, is this same idea of a covenant meal being so significant. One of the reasons Judas was condemned is he ate with the Lord and then raised his heel against him. It's horrendous. Even today, to eat with a Bedouin or with an Arab is to make a covenant with him, a friendship. In the morning, they arose early and exchanged oaths. Then Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. Now, although this man's going to call the name of the Lord, verse 28, he says Yahweh. I don't think that means he was a Yahwehist or a believer. He just knew what Isaac called his deity and calls him by that and recognizes his God's presence. Now, it came about on the same day that Isaac's servants came in and told him about the well which they had dug, and he said, "We found water." So we called the place. Now, the word here, you might go back to Genesis 21:31, for it's going to be the name upon which the term Beersheba is going to be built. Now, there's some etymological confusion here because Beersheba goes by two names. In Genesis 21:31, it's either the name, the place of the seven wells, or the place of the oath. And so it goes by two, and this is the idea of the oath here. And then Esau was 40 years old. He married Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite. Now, verses 34 and 35 are a totally different subject and should go later with chapter 27. You might want to see chapter 27, 46. It's going to show some of the problems continuing to show Esau is not a spiritual man. He's a secular man. He married about the age 40, same as Jacob's going to do, but he's going to marry some Canaanite women. And look at it says, and they made life miserable for Isaac and Rebekah. And of course, in chapter 27, 46, it's going to say Rebekah felt like she was going to die because of Esau's wives. Now, I don't know what they did to drive her up the wall, but there was some problem there. It's a problem in Esau marrying those Canaanite women because Abraham had told him earlier, don't take a wife from the people who surround you. So Esau either did not know that family tradition or didn't care about it. And by looking at the man's life, he just didn't care about spiritual things. I'm not saying he was a bad sinner. He was just an outdoorsman who'd rather hunt than go to church. He'd rather do what he wanted to than what God wanted him to do. There's the difference. And so him and Jacob are very pronouncedly different characteristics. Well, that's the end of chapter 26, and it basically concludes the chapter that deals with Isaac. And he comes across a very godly man, very patient, not arrogant, not pushy, willing to live in harmony with his neighbors, willing to believe God, overcame all the tests that God put before him as Abraham had. But now in chapter 27, we're going to transition now to Jacob, who is the main figure. Well, I've really enjoyed being with you, and I'll see you again, same time, same place, next week. God bless you.